KALW.
We have a lot of people in our community who are in recovery, many who may have even been involved with dealing drugs at some level themselves. And so I think we're in a very good position to actually come up with some solutions.
San Francisco Supervisor Matt Haney set up a new task force to tackle drug dealing in the city.
Let's actually try some things. Let's be creative. Let's not just accept that your only option is to go out back out there and deal.
We'll find out more about his plan. Then we'll hear from men inside San Quentin State Prison as they consider masculinity and music.
I'll never forget the way I felt when I wrote that poem. You know what I mean? I felt like there was release. Like I felt like there was some weight off my shoulders, and I cried. Like I really cried after I wrote that poem.
Stay tuned. Cross Currents is coming up. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hana Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Drug overdose deaths spiked in San Francisco last year, totaling 259. Fentanyl overdose rates are rising rapidly, and the Department of Public Health officials say meth use is rising too. At the same time, there's been a decrease in drug-related arrests and citations in the epicenter of the San Francisco drug trade in the Tenderloin and around mid-market. And some residents say that open-air drug dealing has gotten worse there. A new task force aims to change that. Haley Gray has the story.
I'm standing on the corner of Ellis and Leavenworth in the Tenderloin with Fernando Pujals.
We have one daycare center a block that way. Just to the west is a rec center where hundreds of kids will access every day. Two blocks to the south of us is a daycare center.
Pujals is the director of communications for the Tenderloin Community Benefit District. He thinks people tend to forget there are kids in the Tenderloin, but there are more than 3,000 children in the Tenderloin and south of Market, according to the San Francisco Planning Department. He says there has always been drug dealing in this area, but in the last 5 or so years, it feels like it's intensified, and he fears it's impacting the children.
Kids are exposed to environmental trauma and environmental stress based on what they see that's either part of or periphery to the open drug market.
I head to Bodecker Park, a playground and basketball court a few blocks away, and find Patrick, who asked to be identified only by his first name. The 24-year-old is a Tenderloin resident and sick of seeing drug dealers every day.
I would prefer it to somehow, some way, for it to just go away because, you know, with the drug dealing, there comes a lot of people that are high, you know, and then after that, there's this huge poop problem, you know, it feels like an obstacle course when you're walking through. So, to me, there has to be something done.
And over in South of Market, at the corner of 7th and Mission, I see a group of men openly selling illicit drugs. Baggies of white powder are swapped for cash. Behind them, I see a pile of needles. Matt Haney is the supervisor for this district, so the using and dealing is on his doorstep, and the doorsteps of his constituents.
This is an unacceptable and untenable position, and there is very little that the city is doing that is serious about disrupting the status quo.
The residents I spoke to tend to agree on that. What people are less sure about is the solution. Here's Patrick again.
Punishing someone just for drug dealing isn't the solution too, right? It's trying to actually help the addict get off of it and trying to create no market for it.
Other neighborhood residents, like Santos Can, aren't thinking about rehabilitation. They just want the streets to feel safer for their kids.
There is like a lot of people that use drugs, you know, like mostly like in the mornings when my daughter, she's got to school every time, every single day, you know.
Ben Lynchinger is the advocacy program manager at the Glide Foundation, a Tenderloin-based church and nonprofit.
A lot of folks who are selling are also using. A lot of folks who are selling are supporting families. And their issues are not issues that are best solved by the fact that they're selling, but it seems like the only option they have.
Lynchinger doesn't think throwing more police at the problem is the answer. Pujals agrees. He thinks sometimes arrests only seem to make his neighborhood safer.
There are sort of short-lived moments where people would describe them as calm after major arrests.
He also thinks these arrests may have unintended consequences.
We also see other disruptions, displacement. We see drug supply that is that sort of changes and then leads to more overdose on the street. So we see more chaotic behavior and more violence sometimes after those incidents where people created a turf vacuum, a sort of power vacuum.
Enter Supervisor Haney. He's calling for new approaches.
Let's actually try some things. Let's be creative. Let's not just accept that your only option is to go out back out there and deal. Same for corners that have been taken over entirely by drug dealing.
Supervisor Haney doesn't have the answer, but he thinks it could be unlocked by bringing people with different viewpoints together. People like Lynchinger, Pujals, and Can.
People in the Tenderloin and south of Market have experiences on all sides of this. We have a lot of people in our community who are in recovery, have recovered, many who may have even been involved with dealing drugs at some level themselves. And so I think we're in a very good position to actually come up with some solutions.
His proposal, the Street Level Drug Dealing Task Force, was signed into law in October. On the one hand, it seems like standard issue. 12 members will study the problem. They'll make quarterly reports to the Board of Supervisors, and eventually they'll make policy recommendations. What's unique about Haney's approach is that, by law, it requires a mix of members with a diversity of experiences and perspectives, including dealers, residents, and law enforcement. Ben Lynchinger is a big fan of Haney's plan.
I think what we should be doing is looking at the issue as the harms related to open-air drug sales. That's what this legislation talks about and what it's trying to do by including people from all walks of life.
Fernando Pujals is hopeful too.
What I really appreciate that the supervisor's office has done is make space on that task force for community members and for community to have a say and also an observation on how the task force develops.
So what will 12 different people studying and talking about drug dealing really do to change it? That remains to be seen. The task force is expected to begin meeting in January. In the Tenderloin, I'm Haley Gray for Cross Currents.
Haley is a student at the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. The task force will start submitting reports and making recommendations to the city next spring. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hana Baba. And now we'll bring you the fourth episode of our new series, Uncuffed, recorded and produced by our partners in California prisons. Today's show comes from the crew at San Quentin.
So this is Greg Eskridge from Uncuffed, coming at you from the San Quentin side of the world. Today I'm in the media center, got the fellas with me, we at the round table. And today's topic, we're talking about death and talking about coping inside of prison and how the fellas deal with these tough times when they come up. So we're going to kick it around today and just have a little conversation about that. So with me today, I got Shakur.
What up, though?
I got Nate.
What's happening?
I got Young Ton.
What?
And I got Young Ease Edmund.
What's going on, y'all?
What's happening with y'all today, man? How's everybody doing today, man?
Yeah.
We chilling, man.
Good. Oh, as well. Great,
for sure.
Okay, so anyway, man, so like I said earlier, man, today we talked about loss and just how we deal with it. We want to just kind of just kick around and just see some of the ways that when something tragic happens and, you know, we get that bad news, how we deal with it. So, Nate, I'm going to kick it at you first. Nate, man, talk about that.
You know, I usually sing to deal with stressors. I use music as a way to soothe, you know, my emotional unrest. You know, like, I'm no Luther Vandross, but a chair is still a chair. you know, stuff like that.
You know,
how do you deal with it, Edmund?
I mean, how I deal with loss in prison, like, one of my fears being incarcerated is losing my mother. I think that's something that we all can resonate with.
Absolutely.
One of the ways that I do cope with it is I write poetry.
That's right.
And then when I do get a chance to talk to my mother, like, I share it with her. You feel me?
Mm.
So that's how I cope with it.
That's deep, right?
That's
there.
That's right. Got to spread the love.
For sure.
Yeah.
But today we're here because of Young Ton. You know, Ton brought us a story. Mm-hmm. And so, Ton, why don't you go ahead and tell us about what you put together for us?
For
For sure, for sure. So I put together the story about Maserati E, my good friend, man. He's home, man. Freedom 2019. I'm with it. So I'm excited because the story is about how he deals with pain and how he dealt with like losing a loved one. And me, I was performing music all over San Quentin with Maserati E, man. And like, I really felt that soul in him, man. I felt like he had a story that needed to be told, man. And that's what this is all about. So I wanted to give him that platform.
That's big,
that's
man.
What's up?
That's big. Let's go. Well, let's hear
get
it,
to it.
Drop it.
Push play.
No lie. Yeah. Yeah. Please feel me. Maserati E. My name is Eric Abercrombie, a.k.a. Maserati E. I've been doing music forever and a day. I picked up the guitar in 2012 in Old Folsom, and music is my passion. That's my life, that's my everything.
I spent away, use this time to try to find me a better way to stack this.
For me, I do my music mainly because it's therapeutic. It's the only way I could really get suppressed emotions and thoughts and stuff like that out. I can't really express myself through speaking like how I can through the music. I don't necessarily have to say a word, but once I play the guitar, play the piano, anything like that, it's like I'm letting it all out. I could allow my emotions to be heard and be felt. It's like so visceral.
I've been up all night, too much anticipation. I've been waiting my whole life, but I'm tired of waiting. So
like, when my brother got killed, the music definitely got me through it. I wrote quite a few songs about it. It's in like a lot of my lyrics, you know what I mean?
It's the eyes, man. No lie, I just gotta stay alive, man. Cause tomorrow ain't promised to nobody, can't nobody.
It definitely helped me get through my morning, I guess you could say. And it really helped me with accepting it, because for like quite some time it didn't even seem real. It was like, man, this shit is crazy. But then, you know, like through the music, I was able to really like vent and not just suppress it, because I wasn't talking to nobody about it. Like, I was on some like fake ass bravado type, you know what I mean? Like, I'm good, ain't nothing wrong. Like, I'm just chilling, this, that, and the other. But inside, I was sick.
Trying to find me a better way to stack this money to the sky, make it elevate. Planning like a mastermind each and every day.
And it was like hella songs that I was making, I wasn't showing nobody because I was exposing that pain, exposing that sickness. But then eventually, it got to the point where it was like, I felt like people got to hear this, because I know I wasn't the only one going through that. You know what I mean? Like, the people that I was around, you feel me? I'm from Oakland, and like, people get killed all the time. Like, got hella dead partners for real. So it was like, when it's so frequent, you know what I mean? When it's so frequent and it happens on a frequent basis like that, I mean, eventually you're gonna get used to it. You're gonna become desensitized to death and things like that. Even though it still hurt, but it start not to hurt as bad as it used to.
Stack this money to the sky, make it elevate. Planning
music, like I said, is my form of therapy. So it's like, me and my bros, you feel me, it was like we going through the same stuff. So I started kind of feeling kind of selfish a little bit.
I'm so tired of struggling, I really am.
Knowing that to a certain degree, it was making me feel better. So based on that, I know that it was relatable to a lot of other people. I started kind of exposing that, and it was being felt. And then they was able to feel a sense of release through me.
Broke now, trying to build up, trying to stack to the ceiling. Hungry like the children in the African village. I know it's gonna get greater later, man. Trying to speak it to existence, why I say them things. I learned you gotta go through hell to get to heaven. I will never give up on my mission. No matter what life throw my way, cause I'm way too ambitious. So I'ma shoot my shot, I got way too.
So that was Maserati E.
Mm-hmm.
Maserati is finally free out there in the world now to make his music.
That's right.
For sure.
And you gotta get to hell to get to heaven.
Yes, sir.
I feel it.
And that was a piece by Tan Tran.
Yes, yes.
My boy, Tan put that together, man. Him and Maserati sat down, both of them musicians. But Tan, I'm just curious, man, because as a musician yourself, man,
yeah,
to sit down with a fellow musician and to come up with something so dynamic as this piece, man. I mean, like, what was the thought process with you and him just coming together and collaborating like that, bro?
So I was like, man, this is a story that needs to be told, because I was like, if this resonates with me, and I know so many men in here write music, you know what I mean? Like everybody, like I won't say everybody, but there's a lot of men in here that write music as an expression of their soul. I feel like in these bars, we get the realest, rawest form of hip hop, you feel me, of just music. Because in here, like, we really going through it. Like, we considered the bottom caste of society, the slums, you know what I mean? We the slum dogs of this society, you know what I mean? And that shows in our music, that desperation, that hunger, you know what I mean? That feeling like we ain't come from nothing, we ain't got nothing, but look, here we are, hear me.
What resonated with me is kind of talking about how we're conditioned to act and not to feel, mm-hmm. and never taught to kind of express our emotions or vent in any type of way. So him kind of like looking within himself and finding music as this outlet is so important. And I feel everybody needs to find that release.
Absolutely.
It makes me think about like the first time I ever even wrote a poem. I was like 12 years old, right? And my foster sister, she had two babies, and then Child Protective Services came and snatched them up from her. They snatched them because she was on drugs and she couldn't quit drugs. And then they took them. When they took my two nieces away, I basically helped raise those babies. It broke my heart. And at 12 years old, I was already a gang member. And I was already instilled from like a very young age that, you know, boys don't cry, boys don't show emotion, and we don't talk about these things. And like for me at that moment, like I didn't have no other outlet. I didn't know where to go. But I remember my sister had this old beat up compact computer. One of them big bubble monitors, you know what I'm talking about? So I remember I just opened up a Word document and I just typed a poem. I don't remember exactly what I wrote in that poem, but I remember that first time. I'll never forget the way I felt when I wrote that poem. You know what I mean? I felt like there was release. Like I felt like there was some weight off my shoulders, and I cried. Like I really cried after I wrote that poem. And then I knew from that moment on that I have a tool now. Like in my young mind, I didn't call it no tool at that time, but I knew though, like I can do this when I'm really hurting, and it helps. And personally, I know Edmund, man, like I know you got something to say on this, man. How you feeling about that?
Man, like just sitting back and thinking about systems, like all of us just express like some form of conditioning, and the system that I see is patriarchy. It tells men as a function you can't feel. You know what I'm saying? And just looking back, like how I was raised, I couldn't cry. If I started to cry, I would get in trouble. I would get beat for acting essentially like a girl or a female.
Yeah.
So it's like this verbal and physical abuse. And when you're 5 or 6 years old, it's like who do you turn to? If this is happening in the household from the people that are supposed to take care of you. You know what I'm saying? And like I ran away so often. You know what I'm saying? Like I didn't want to be in this situation. So like I suppressed a whole lot of emotions. You know what I'm saying? So as I got older and I found poetry, like that was my release. Like I could speak to this paper. Okay. And now that I have a platform where other people can look at this piece of paper with my emotions on it and be like, I resonate with that. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I can relate to it. When I was as a youth, I was real young when I was taught that it wasn't cool to show emotions. And the emotion that was mostly accepted was the emotion of anger. And I was able to express that with impunity, so to speak. I had an opportunity when I was young to vent, but not in a constructive way, I believe. I believe that it was a very destructive way, and I was trained from an early age to be like this. And it, like you said, it came from the home. It was a home environment. It wasn't nothing that was pitched outside. I had to pick it up in the locker room or something like that. It was like, I need you to go out there and beat his ass. And if you come on here and crying, I'm going to beat your ass. So it was kind of like reflective.
Factual.
Like, what ass whooping do I want? Do I want it from the little guy or Big Mama? You know what I mean? I think I'll take my chances with the lesser of the two evils, and I'm going to go out there and prove that I am what you want me to be. through a lot of different mechanisms now, you know, and a lot of people who might listen to this may be able to relate to this, it's not the only way to go. The way to go is to be in touch with you and be your authentic self. And if that means showing vulnerability, and if that means crying or showing some type of emotion, some type of release, then do that, you know, because I don't want you to end up next door to me. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That's what I was.
1,000.
All right.
So when talking about, you know, talking about growing up and having these different feelings that, you know, we, for me, that I kept inside, I know one of the things that I wish I could have been able to say was that that I really need to be loved. You know, I really need to be cared for. And I didn't get that, and I didn't know how to ask for that because I had this idea of men can't be vulnerable, be weak and all that. So I was like, man, how can I tell my family that I'm hurting right now? You know what I mean? How can I go to my moms or my pops and say, man, I'm not feeling good right now. I don't feel like I'm being loved. I don't feel like I'm being heard, without them saying, boy, get your ass in outside and go play. You know what I mean? So, you know, so for me, man, just trying to have that having that release valve, you know, would have potentially changed my life, man.
When I did this piece with Maserati, like, man, it really hit me like a bag of bricks when he talked about his brother passing away. And it made me think about my cousin that passed away, you know, that deeply affected like me and my family. Cause I was 15 years old, deep in the gang lifestyle. My cousin, he was a square, he was a student body, you know what I mean? And then one of my older cousins, he just got out the pen, you know, as, man, it gets slimy. He still had enemies, and then so a drive-by happened, and my cousin got killed. And I remember how badly like that just messed me up for the longest. I was so hurt behind that. My uncle and them, they blamed us for it, you know, and rightfully so. Like, we were the gang members, you know. My cousin wasn't a gang member, and he got smoked because of us. I couldn't talk. I remember at his funeral, like, the hatred I seen in my uncle's eyes for me, you know, like, and then, like, literally our last conversation, he said, why my son? He said, why my son? Y'all was the gang members, why my son?
Damn. I'm gonna bring it to like relatively recent. Like on New Year's in 2018, my son was killed by police, right? And so I'm glad I had done the work because a whole lot of feelings was coming up for me. You're talking about anger, you're talking about rage, right? And I wanted to act on that. I wanted to get high. It didn't feel good at all, right? But one of the things that I did do was, like, I listened to some of the most dark music I can find. You know?
Factual.
As a way to cope. Like, yeah. I'm not acting out these feelings, but this is how I feel. So I listened to Brother Lynch Hung. I don't know if you guys heard of him.
Yeah, insane.
But, yeah, he's like a sick rapper.
What?
Right? And please don't judge
me.
But the thing was, I was able to listen to him, and he was saying things that I felt. I was able to listen, like, to N.W.A., right? They were saying things that I felt, right? You know, F the police, right? But I wasn't acting out on those. Mm. So that lets me know that I was able, like, that there's growth in me, and I'm able to cope. You know, by listening to that music and exercising.
Yeah, that's a form of release. 1,000.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
I feel that, man. So yeah, man. So once again, shout outs to Maserati E.
Maserati E.
No lie.
For real.
The young phenom out there, man. Make us all proud out there, baby. Make us proud, man. We all cheering for you, man. You know, you one of us, man. Hey, but yeah, man, man, I appreciate everybody coming together, man. Ty, shout out to you too, bro, man, for blessing us with that masterpiece, man. That was deep, man. As you can see, man, that we went for music and we went all the way around. You know, we think we touched on every emotion possible, you know what I mean? All based on what you presented us with, man. So for the audience out there, man, this is Uncuffed. This is what we do. Real, raw, authentic. You know what I mean? It's just cats sitting up in the booth, and we just giving you our hearts. We're giving you our real, you know what I mean? And we just hope that y'all love that, love and like that what we do.
That excerpt from the show Uncuffed was made by the crew at San Quentin. Chanton Bunn, Greg Eskridge, Nate McKinney, Edmund Richardson, Tommy Shakur Ross, and Ton Tran. Our work in prisons is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability. All content is approved by an information officer. Hear more by subscribing to Uncuffed in any podcast player. Let's wrap things up with some local music. This is Sonny Smith from San Francisco. He's performing a solo set at BFF.FM Studios in the city tomorrow night. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sona Avakian, Janae Darden, Christopher Agusa, Nina Gensler-Debs, True Quinn, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Jessica Plachik, Andrew Stelzer, and Eli Wirtschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adel. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Treffney.